We're going to talk to definitely the smartest person I've ever spoken to on the radio, maybe the smartest person I've ever spoken to in life, Dr. Zachary Binney, a PhD, joining us now to discuss everything going on with COVID-19 and, more importantly, the way the sports world is handling it. Zachary, how's it going today?
I'm good, guys, but I assure you that is not true. And thank you so much for deigning to still have an American and a good old Southern redneck, no less, on your show on Canada Day.
Well, I mean, as you know, we're a very welcoming, open people. We welcome all
yes,
comers.
Sir.
Now, before we get too far into this, just as a matter of deference and respect, should I call you Zach or Dr. Binney?
Zach is completely fine.
Okay. All right. I like it. We'll keep it. We'll keep it.
You should do with anybody in our position. Yeah. Let's keep it informal.
Okay, there we go. Zach is joining us now. He's an epidemiologist. Among many titles, I'm looking on your Twitter feed, the incoming assistant prof of quantitative theories and methods. Yeah, definitely the smartest guy I know.
I read that. I read a book on that, yes, last week.
No. So, Zach, obviously...
I'm a math teacher, guys. Don't get too impressed.
Oh, well, again, wrong guys to be talking to. Maybe I'll get some tips on that when we're done. But in terms of the sports world, it seems like all of the leagues have very differing plans. I guess the two that would be closest are the NBA plan and the NHL plan. They're at least going to try to have some semblance of bubbles, whereas baseball is planning to play games inside their own stadiums. I believe that's the track the NFL is trying to take as well. What do you kind of make of the four major leagues going with, for the most part, different styles of plans?
Yeah, so of the four major leagues, I definitely like the NBA and NHL's plans the most. And as you alluded to, that's because both of them do the two most important things, I think, for any plan. Number one is some sort of centralization or sequestering, where whether it's in one city or in a couple of hub cities like the NHL is talking about, you are bringing everybody who has to run the league together, and you are really limiting the contact between those inside the league and those outside the league. And if you do a lot of testing beforehand of the people who are going to be inside that bubble, then the idea is to keep the virus out, or at least keep most of the virus out. The second thing that they're doing is frequent testing every day or every other day. And that's important because it stops one case from becoming 10 or 20, because we catch them early before they have a chance to spread. Major League Baseball, on the other hand, is having players and staff live at home in their home markets, and they're kind of relying on the honor system for people not to do things like go to outside gyms or bars or anything like that. And that just raises the risk of cases on a team. And I think that that plan would work fine in Germany or South Korea or other places that have control of the virus, but I'm very nervous with the sheer volume of cases we have here in the U.S. that MLB will be able to make it through like that without an outbreak forcing a team and potentially the league to eventually shut down before they get finished.
So I'm glad you brought up the MLB there, Zach, because that's where I want to go with you. And one of the concerns I hear a lot about the MLB from friends and family who have sort of been texting me about their kind of plan and talking to me about their plan is that, like, mm-hmm. Canada and Toronto have done, like, a somewhat pretty good, like, we've kind of flattened the curve here, and our cases have been really going down in the past month or so.
Yep.
But, like, how much risk is there, and especially because the Jays have two teams from Florida in their division, which, I mean, there's other places in the states that have issues. It's not just Florida, but they're one of the sort of flashpoint areas in the states. I mean, how much risk involved is there having teams travel in and out from there, come here? I mean, all it takes is one guy going out to the bar, right? Like, it's all it takes is one.
Right. Right.
How much risk is involved in that?
It's hard to estimate the risk directly, but there are a couple things that reduce that risk. One is that even the teams in Florida, everybody is being tested every other day. So everybody who travels. So that doesn't mean that no cases are going to get through, because you can certainly have somebody, you know, test negative on Monday and then test positive on Wednesday. And you know, you miss that for a couple of days, and they made it to Toronto in that middle time. If you can really keep people in the hotel, be really strict about that, especially in Toronto, maybe you reach some sort of agreement with local authorities even. I don't know what it would look like, but that would probably limit the threat to public health. But you're right that it only takes potentially one guy who is missed by a test and then goes out to a crowded bar, and then you've got a few cases. And hopefully, because you're starting from such a low level, your public health authorities will be able to identify that and trace the source and contact trace and shut it down. But the risk isn't zero, that's for sure. And I wouldn't blame any city that was wary of letting people come in from hot zones, even if they are being tested regularly.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people tend to go with it. Myself included, I have my own apprehensions about the plan, but I don't know that it's any different coming to Toronto than it would be if there were a team in, I'm going to pick a state that I presume has a low outbreak, North Dakota or something like that. I don't know that it'd really be any different. Mm-hmm. And then for our listeners who don't know, the Blue Jays do have the hotel attached to the ballpark, and that's where the visiting teams have been told they'll stay. So it's very easy from that standpoint. But yeah, like you said, it just kind of takes one. We keep talking about the testing, and I feel like obviously this is a larger kind of political question, but how do you kind of equate the morals, for lack of a better term, of a league, be it the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, whoever it is, using up the tens of thousands of tests they're going to be going through to deal with this? I mean, is this just part of big business and they're going to do what they need to do, or how do you kind of deal with the morals of that, or maybe there's more testing capacity than I realize?
No, it's a great question. We definitely still don't have as many tests as we need in the United States, but epidemiologists love to think in what we call counterfactuals, which is a big fancy word for basically meaning how would the world be under one condition versus under the other condition. So if, say, MLB throws a whole bunch of money to produce a bunch of tests and gives 50% of those tests to the community and keeps 50% for themselves, then theoretically, the community has more tests because MLB is trying to operate than if they weren't, right? So there, for me, that reduces the ethical quandaries a little bit. But if you're trying to operate in an area, and I'm actually afraid for the NBA on this point, if you are sitting in Orlando and they don't have the tests that they need for everybody who wants a test, everybody who wants a test can't get a test, and you're sitting there in your bubble and you've given a bunch of tests to the community, but they still don't have enough, and you're still testing every player and some staff members every day, I think as a human being, you have to kind of sit there and look yourself in the mirror and go, how much longer can we fiddle while Rome burns down around us, right? And so I think that's a very, very serious question that teams and leagues are going to have to confront.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? It's just you at the end of the day, you're a business, but you're also kind of part of society and the world. And I have to be honest, the thing I'm most relieved by in all of this is that the NFL doesn't have to be the league to decide when to start playing, because I really, you know, maybe it's just my own biases, but I feel like they are the kind of most craven league that would do whatever it can take to get going. Do you think that you know, kind of, for lack of a better term, society is helped out by the fact that they're the fourth sport to go through this as opposed to if they were the first?
Oh, I really wouldn't want to speculate on that. I will say that I have a tremendous amount of respect for their chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills. It's still difficult to see what their plan is going to be. I think they're going to release some more details in the next couple of weeks. But for right now, you know, I couldn't give them an A or an F. It would be an incomplete, because we simply haven't seen the details that we need to see in terms of, are they going to try to establish a bubble? Are they just going to rely on testing? What is that all going to look like? I just don't think we have those details yet. For my money, what I would be advising them is something I'm calling home market bubbles. So that would be, you're not creating a single one in Orlando like the NBA is, but you're saying every team, the players and family members, if you could, and staff, all move into a hotel or a couple of hotels. You create a closed loop between there and the stadium, and you really limit contacts between people inside your team and outside your team as much as possible, and you just fly charter between those bubbles. I think that might be necessary in markets with a lot of disease. And the unfortunate thing is, it's like trying to skate to where the puck's going to be, right? Except we're blindfolded. We can't see the puck, really. So we don't know what markets are going to explode. So it may be smarter just to establish those in all markets right from the outset.
So I got to ask you about college football, because here in Canada, college football isn't that huge of a thing. Like, there's people here that obviously love it, but like in the States, I mean, you know, I don't have to tell you, I mean, that's a huge sort of like, it's just a uniting thing. Everyone loves college football. It's a huge moneymaker for these schools and for these like, and obviously the players don't get paid. So the ethics of like, I mean, it's one thing to have guys going back to play in these leagues where they're making money, but these guys aren't making money and they're going to be asked to go back and play during a pandemic. I mean, where do you stand on the college football stuff? Where do you think we'll hear about if they're playing or not? I mean, just kind of your thoughts on that whole situation.
Yeah, I think college football is a lot more questionable an idea than any pro sport for a few reasons. One is they just don't have as many resources as the pro leagues do. So they're not going to be able to do as frequent testing, I think, at least many programs. You're not going to be able to establish any kind of bubble on college campuses. That's just not realistic. And you don't have any kind of centralized authority. It's kind of all schools for themselves right now. Some of them seem to have put together decent plans with regular follow-up testing, and others haven't. But we've seen examples of even really well-resourced programs here in the state, very rich programs. The University of Texas, Louisiana State University, and Clemson in South Carolina, for example, who have all had outbreaks, meaning the protocols they set up for the athletes returning over the summer for workouts were not sufficient. They didn't do their job to keep these athletes safe. They didn't set up a safe environment. So if you can't do that when you just have a few athletes together on campus for non-contact workouts, I'm really dubious about being able to do that on a full campus for the season.
Yeah, it feels feels like definitely a daunting task. I wouldn't ever say anything's impossible, but that's certainly tracking close to it. One last one before we let you go. The Rudy Gobert was kind of, at least for a lot of people, I don't want to say patient zero, but he was the first kind of mainstream big case, at least in the sports world, they heard about. A report came out, I believe it was late last week or early this week, that he is still getting his sense of smell and taste back. Do you think, I mean, as much as we have talked about this and as much as we have, you know, hammered home, rightly so, how dangerous this is, do you still think people aren't wholly grasping that this isn't just like a one and done? There can be lingering effects, and just they aren't grasping the severity of it, quite honestly.
Yeah, I think that here in the South, we call Rudy Gobert a lot of people's, that was your come to Jesus moment, okay? That was that was what really made it clear to you that we had a problem here. And so I think, honestly, Rudy Gobert is a public health hero, maybe on accident, but that's how I see him now. He, you know, 3 months later, he's still having problems with at least his sense of smell, he said. You've got an Olympian who said this virus was unlike anything he had ever experienced. You had Von Miller, a pass rusher for the Denver Broncos, who granted has asthma, but he had breathing problems for at least 2 months. From this virus. And then just today, we got news that the 38-year-old pitching coach for the Cubs has had very severe problems. He lost 18 pounds over a month fighting the virus. Jeez. And still has breathing problems from it. I mean, I don't know. Yes, the risk is lower for, say, young elite athletes, but it's not zero. Okay? And I think that people do need to recognize it. And it's easy to make that mistake initially, but I like to sit people down and I like to say, look, the risk isn't zero. And no matter what, if these guys get sick, they can spread it to other people, older coaches, older athletic staff members, older family members. So you're still creating cases in the middle of a pandemic. And it's just not a good idea to have that happen in any case. So we need to avoid getting as many people sick as we possibly can, regardless of who they are.
Very, very well said. I'm definitely smarter than I was about 16 minutes ago. Zach,
pleasure
thank
talking
you.
To you, man.
Yeah,
honestly.
loved the chat. Thanks for taking the time.
Pleasure talking to you guys too. Take care, stay safe, and happy Canada Day. Is that what you say? Happy Canada Day.
That's
yes,
exactly.
Sir, nailed it.
Throw in an A on the all end, right. And you're perfect. There we go. There he goes, Zachary Binney, PhD.